30. My attempt to seclude myself in a small, secure, private domain failed very quickly. The reason was that there was no such domain. Very soon the wind whistled into my private life from all sides and blew it apart. By the autumn there was nothing left of what I had considered my circle of friends. For instance, there was a small working group of 6 young intellectuals, all of them referendars, approaching the assessor examinations, all from the same social class. I was one of them. We prepared for the exams together, and that was the outward reason the group had been formed. But it had long since become something more than that, and formed a small, intimate debating club. We had very different political opinions, but would not have dreamed of hating one another for them. Indeed, we were all on very good terms. The opinions were not diametrically opposed, rather, in a manner typical of the range of views held by young intellectual Germans in 1932, they formed a circle. The extreme ends of the arc almost met. The most left-wing member was Hessel, a doctor's son with communist sympathies. The most right-wing was Holtz, an officer's son who held military nationalistic views. Yet they often made a common front against the rest of us. They both came from the youth movement, and both thought in terms of leagues. They were both anti-bourgeois and anti-individualistic. Both had an ideal of community and community spirit. For both, jazz music, fashion magazines, the Kurfürstendamm, in other words, the world of glamour and easy come, easy go, were a red rag. Both had a secret liking for terror, in a more humanistic garb for the one, more nationalistic for the other. As similar views make for similar faces, they both had a certain stiff, thin-lipped, humourless expression, and, incidentally, the greatest respect for each other. Courtesy was anyway a matter of course among the members of the group. Two other opponents, who understood each other well, and often supported each other against their own confederates, were Brock and I. We were more difficult to locate on the political scale than Hessel and Holtz. Brock's opinions were revolutionary and extremely nationalistic, mine rather conservative and extremely individualistic. From the ideas of the right and the left, we had each picked the exact opposite. Yet there was something that united us. At heart, we were both aesthetes, and we both worshipped unpolitical gods. Brock's god was adventure, collective adventure a la 1914-18 or 1923. My god was the god of Goethe and Mozart. Forgive me if I do not name him for the moment. So it was inevitable that we were opponents on every topic, but often opponents who gave each other a wink. We could also drink well together. Hessel was a teetotaler and opposed to alcohol on principle. Holtz drank in such desperate moderation that it was a shame. Then there were two natural mediators, Hirsch, the son of a Jewish university professor, and von Hagen, the son of a very high civil servant. Von Hagen was the only one of us who belonged to a political organization. He was a member of the Deutsche Demokratische Partei, German Democratic Party, and also of the Reichsbanner. That did not prevent him from mediating. On the contrary, it predestined him for it. He tried to reconcile all opinions and had understanding for every point of view. Further, he was the embodiment of a good upbringing, tact, and impeccable manners. It was impossible for a discussion to degenerate into altercation if he was present. Hirsch was his second. His specialty was gentle scepticism and tentative anti-Semitism. Yes, he had a weakness for anti-Semites and always tried to give them a chance. I remember a discussion between us in which he seriously took the anti-Semitic part, and I, to redress the balance, took the anti-Teutonic part. Such was the chivalry of our debates. Besides, Hirsch and von Hagen did their very best to bring an occasional tolerant smile to Holtz's and Hessel's lips, and to induce Brock and me to make a serious avowal now and then. They did their utmost to prevent Holtz and me, or Hessel and Brock, destroying each other's holy of holies. That was only thinkable in these two combinations. It was a nice group of hopeful young men. If you had seen them in 1932, sitting around a table, smoking and eagerly debating with one another, you could hardly have thought that its members would, within a year, figuratively speaking, be standing on opposing barricades, ready to shoot one another. To cut a long story short, today Hirsch, Hessel, and I are emigrants. Brock and Holtz are high Nazi officials, and von Hagen is a lawyer in Berlin. He is a member of the Association of National Socialist Lawyers and of the National Socialist Drivers Reserve, and possibly, with regret, but it is necessary, of the party itself. You can see that he is still faithful to his role of mediator. From the beginning of March 1933, the atmosphere in our group started to become poisonous. It was no longer as easy as before to hold courteous academic discussions about the Nazis. There was an embarrassing, tense meeting at Hirsch's home shortly before April the 1st. Brock made no secret of the fact that he greeted the coming events with a pleasantly warm feeling of amusement, and he relished the superiority with which he could state that there is naturally a certain nervousness among my Jewish friends. In his view, expressed in the same mode, the organization seemed to be pretty dreadful, but it was interesting to see how such a mass experiment would turn out. In any case, it opened up the most exciting prospects. Thus spoke Brock, and it was difficult to find anything for which he did not have an answer, given with the same brazen smile. Holtz responded thoughtfully that there might well be regrettable incidents in such a summary and improvisatory process, but that anyway the Jews... and so on. Our host, Hirsch, finding himself thus relieved of the necessity of taking sides with the anti-Semites, sat silently by, biting his lips. Von Hagen pointed out tactfully that on the other hand the Jews... and so on. It was a beautiful discussion about the Jews, and it dragged on. Hirsch continued to say nothing and occasionally passed around the cigarettes. Hessel tried to attack racism with scientific arguments. Holtz defended it with scientific counter-arguments. It was all very pedantic and very sober. "All right, Hessel," he said, more or less, taking a slow puff on his cigarette, exhaling and watching the smoke coil upward. "In a humane state, such as you are tacitly assuming, all these problems may not exist, but you have to admit that when a new form of state is being set up, as is the case at the moment, racial homogeneity..." I began to feel nauseated, and decided to say something tactless. "It seems to me," I said, "that the question here is not how a national state should be founded, but quite simply the personal stance of each one of us. Isn't that so? Apart from that, there is nothing over which we have any power or influence. What I find interesting in your attitude, Mr. Holtz, is how you reconcile your opinions with your current status as a guest of this house." At that, Hirsch cut me short, and emphasized that he had never made his invitation dependent on any particular opinion, etc. "Of course," I replied, quite angry now, even with him, "and it is not your stance that I am criticizing, but that of Mr. Holtz. I would like to know what it feels like to be someone who accepts the invitation of a person whom he intends, in principle, to do away with, along with all his kind." "Who mentioned doing away with?" cried Holtz, and everybody started to protest, except Brock, who said that he personally saw no contradiction here. "You may be aware," he said, "that in wartime officers are frequently guests in houses that they are going to blow up the next morning." Holtz, on the other hand, soberly proved to me that one could not speak of doing away with when Jewish shops were being boycotted in an orderly and disciplined manner. "Why is it not doing away with them?" I cried, outraged. "If you systematically ruin somebody and take any possibility of earning a living from them, they must surely, finally, starve. Is that not so? I call it doing away with someone when you deliberately allow them to starve. Don't you?" "Calm down," said Holtz. "Nobody starves in Germany. If a Jewish shopkeeper is really ruined, he will get social security payments." The terrible thing was that he said that quite seriously, without the slightest sneer. We parted in a hostile mood.